Thank you so much for permitting me to come be with you again this morning. And I respectfully ask your prayers and the courtesy of your attention for a while. Because I have a burden for you and a love for you. And I want the Lord to bless this effort and be a benefit to you. Well, without more preliminary, propose to speak this morning by the Lord's help on the subject of giving. Giving. There are two ways to approach that topic. One of them is to try to make people feel guilty or required, etc. And the other is to set forth something that has some inspiration in it, creates a passion or an interest in it. And I choose to go the second route this morning, and I propose to do it by the Lord's help by telling you a story. But I begin by reading from the 25th chapter of the book of Matthew, one of Jesus' parables. He said, "For the kingdom of heaven is as a man traveling into a far country, who called his own servants and delivered unto them his goods. And then to one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, and to another 1, to every man according to his several ability, and straightway took his journey. Then he that had received the 5 talents went and traded with the same, and made them other 5 talents. And likewise he that had received 2, he also gained other 2. And there's some more to that story about a fellow who buried his, but I'm not concerned with him this morning. I think he made a bad decision. I don't want to copy it. And I'm more concerned with what happened with the 2 who made the best of what they had. That's a better example in life. And there's a secret in what these men did. We humans, although we have been left with a charge from our Lord to handle the things that He's given us, and we have the understanding that He, by His physical presence, has taken Himself to a far country, yet He never leaves us alone. So when these men started out to do something with the talents the Lord had given them, they had a blessing that went with them. And now I've lived long enough to learn in life how potent and meaningful that blessing is on both sides. I've seen people decide to turn their back on the Lord and walk away, get what they could and would of this world's goods, and watch the Lord set His hand against them. And that's a hard road. That's the road Paul was going in a manner of speaking when he received a visit from the Lord Jesus. And the Lord told him, "It's hard for you to kick against the pricks." And I've also seen people who choose to make the Lord their heritage. And things have a way of working out in a manner you could never predict. We just put His hand on it and cause it to be a blessing. So I'd like to write a word on the board here. And the word I've written is a name. The name is Margaret. I want to tell you a story about Margaret. If you should chance to go sometime to the city of New Orleans, one of the most interesting cities in the world, and while you're there would go by the intersection of Camp and Prytania Street, you would see a little park there. It's quite well maintained today. And the name of the park is Margaret. Margaret's Place, and you would see in that park a statue of a woman. It's one of the 3 oldest statues of women in the United States. There's one that was, I believe, in Rhode Island and one in Cleveland. And one of those was for a person who was involved in the women's suffrage movement. So she was a public speaker and an agitator, and one of them was because some Indians broke into her house and she caught them asleep and killed some of them, and so the town folk erected a statue to her. But this woman is not like either one of those. In the statue, she has on a frumpy looking dress. In a world that values feminine beauty, Margaret was strong. She has a square, blocky face. She's kind of a large woman. She always wore a Quaker's bonnet on her head. And there by her side is a little child also in the statue. She wears old brogans, kind of like men wear, scuffed-looking work shoes, and a pleasant expression on her face. And I'd like to tell you the story of how she came to be there, because it has to do with giving. I found it inspiring, and I hope that you will too. Now, I also need to comment here that I don't know how you feel about other religious faiths. I'm a Church of God man. I believe in this. Have based my life on it. But I don't think we've got God in a box.
No, sir.
And He is free to work with souls anywhere He chooses.
Yeah.
Margaret's family were from Ireland. And they're all Catholic. She was born in Killassandra County, Cavan in Ireland in the early 1800s. And the family into which Margaret was born, Margaret Gaffney, was very poor, like most of the people were. Ireland was the land of the potato famines, and Ireland was the land of great unrest. Red-haired, freckle-faced people, usually industrious kind of people. Well, in the distress of their poverty, Margaret's parents scraped together enough money to buy passage on a ship to the United States and for some of their children, but not for all of them. Three of the children had to be left behind. It's hard to imagine the sorrow of times like that. It had to be absolute desperation that would cause people to do what they did. But at any rate, Margaret was one of the ones who got to come, embarked on a ship, of course a sailing ship at the time, and took 6 months to come from England because the winds were bad, the storms were bad across the United States. By the time they made it here, people were down to eating for the children only one cracker every 3 days. So they almost starved on the trip. And while they were coming across, the Gaffney family, there was another family on the ship whose last name was Richards, and became friends with one another. Margaret was about 5 years old when they landed in the United States and at Baltimore, Ohio. And shortly after she got here, plague of yellow fever swept the city of Baltimore, and both of her parents died. So she was about 6 years old, and she was an orphan. Mrs. Richards took her in and showed her kindness, but not unqualified kindness. She had to work. She learned to do domestic duties, household duties. She was, as I say, strong, healthy, and so she worked until she was about 20 years old or so. She met a young man named Charles Horry and fell in love with him. They got married. Margaret was strong. Charles was frail. Well, that seemed like a good combination. She could carry the load. After a while, they had a little girl. Her name was Frances. But Charles' health being what it was, cold, long Baltimore winters, decided after a time that maybe they would be better off to move to southern climate, so they went to New Orleans. And while they were there, yellow fever struck again, and Margaret's husband died. And it wasn't very long after that until her little girl Frances died as well. By that time, she had lost complete contact with anybody in her family. She knew there were younger brothers and sisters still in Ireland, but she had no way to make contact with them. She had no family at all in the United States. She was an orphan, alone in the city of New Orleans. A few comments about New Orleans at that time. Racial prejudice of various sorts was very strong. Many businesses had signs in the window for help wanted, and beside it another sign that said, "No Irish need apply." They were discriminated against. They didn't have much opportunity to advance themselves. Because Margaret had been obliged to work from the time she was a little girl, she had no opportunity to get education. So by the time she was at this stage of her life, she could neither read nor write, and she was alone in the world. But she was strong and healthy. So she took a job, the only one she could get, at the St. Charles Hotel. New Orleans is a wealthy city. It was then and it is now. It's a city of extravagances. Some of the finest food in the world is prepared in New Orleans. And it's a place where rich people go. At that time, of course, it was before the Civil War. Slavery was everywhere. And people tended to feel like there were classes in society. Upper class expected to live better than other people did. Margaret obviously was in the lower class. And also, New Orleans at that time was considered, for just cause by many, to be the wickedest city in the world. It would have been easy for Margaret, had she chosen to do so, to get involved in the vice and the wickedness down in Gallatin Street, down in the French Quarter. Young men disappeared every night. They were shanghaied and put on board the ships that were sent sailing around the world. They were hit on the head and dropped in the river for the little bit of change that was in their pockets. There were gangs. The city was divided between three ruling, actually governmental ruling bodies, and if you got in trouble in one section of the city, all you had to do to be safe was go into the next jurisdiction, sometimes just a few blocks away. There were no police to follow you. There were places in the city where police wouldn't go. Well, that's the way the city was when Margaret was there. But Margaret was a practicing Roman Catholic. That's what she'd been taught from her childhood. She was very devout in her belief. And she, in her loneliness, found a job, as I say, at the St. Charles Hotel as a laundress, ironing sheets and clothes and pillowcases. Long hours, 12 hours a day or more. OSHA didn't operate at that time. There weren't any child labor laws. There weren't any regulations on how long people could work. She wasn't making very much money, but it was enough for her to live on. And while she was working, she could look out the windows there in front of where her working equipment was and see the children playing in the street. Because just a few doors down from where Margaret was at the St. Charles Hotel, there was an old run-down orphanage. And she saw those little children, and it touched Margaret's heart. And so she started saving her money to find some way to help the little children. And after a while, she had enough saved up, so she bought a cow. And after a while, she had enough saved up, so she bought another cow. And she kept her job at the St. Charles Hotel and worked there the same hours that she had before, but she'd get up early in the morning, and then when she got off work late at night, she would go out, milk her cows morning and evening. And when she could afford to do it, she bought a little cart, and she would go from door to door in the city of New Orleans selling milk. And then she moved from that to selling butter and cheese that she'd made herself. She wondered, when you read the story, how the lady found any time to sleep. And wouldn't you know it, she took the money that she had extra and went to the orphanage to try to help those little children. Put shoes on their feet, put clothes on their backs, always saw to it that they had enough milk so the children had something to drink. Well, the folks at the orphanage took notice of what she was doing, as you would expect they would, and they offered her a room so she could come and stay there. That meant that Margaret didn't have to pay rent anymore, and so she had more money than she had before. She was a thrifty person. She spent very little on herself, and so she built up her herd of cows until after a while she was able to quit her job at the hotel, and she had 40 head of cows that she would milk morning and evening, and she would take her cart and go through the streets of the city and sell her milk and had her regular route. But she was not satisfied just to do that. I'm talking about giving this morning. She would speak to the people, because many of them were very wealthy who were buying her milk, about the orphanage. These little children down here, well, you don't, these clothes that you're throwing out in the back that, you know, a button's gone or they're frayed at the cuff, those little children like to have that. So as the milk went out, the clothes came in. And when she came in the evening, her cart would be full again with things that she'd gotten from the rich people in town, because she didn't mind begging, not for herself, but for the children. And not only that, but she would go, having made the acquaintance of the people at the hotel and learning how they operated, she would go to that hotel and to the other wealthy hotels in town and beg the food that was left over. They couldn't serve these wealthy planters and aristocrats day-old bread or day-old cakes or day-old meat, but the orphans were glad to get it. And she'd get food and bring it back and give it to the children in the orphanage. I think of that as giving. And so Margaret did.
Very good.
So after a while, Margaret's business prospered until it was big enough. She had enough extra money that people who were in trouble with small businesses or one or another would come to her and ask her for a loan to help them out. Well, she was kind-hearted, and so she would help people out. There was one man who came to her with his family named Quine, which is a French name. He had a bakery. And his bakery, for whatever reason, was tottering on the edge of insolvency. But he came to Margaret, asked for a loan, along with several other people that he also from whom he also borrowed money. Margaret loaned him the money, and he continued to be unsuccessful, and his bakery continued to fail until finally it was time for the shareholders to take charge of it, and it turned out that Margaret was the largest shareholder, so she bought everybody else out, and now, from having had a dairy herd of 40 cows, Margaret owned a bakery. From the low point in her life of having been without a father, without a mother, without a daughter, without a husband, alone in the city of New Orleans, no one to love her, no one to care for her, she went from that to having a dairy herd, from having made acquaintance through the whole city with her selling goods to people here and there, respected wherever she went, made contacts wherever she went. She went from that to owning a bakery, and of course she started then to put her benefits into the bakery. And what would you expect Margaret would think of first? Well, bread for the children. And as she increased in the bakery, and she started making cakes and pies and built up the bakery until she was actually able to hire some 40 people to work in the bakery. And who do you think she hired? Well, it was the orphans. They were the ones who were most in need of a job. They were the ones who most appealed to Margaret. She had had first-hand acquaintance with them. She could see who were most likely, who were most capable at the different tasks, and Margaret gave them an opportunity to come and work in her bakery. And she would take bread and sell it, and the most excellent of pies and cakes and baked goods all through the city, wherever there was opportunity. The yellow fever came again. Margaret didn't get it, but a lot of people did. And Margaret, along with the other things she was doing, would go into the homes where mothers had yellow fever and comfort the dying mothers by telling them, "I'll see to it that your children are taken care of." So Margaret started using her money to start another orphanage. You see, just a little ways from where Margaret lived, there was an old run-down building owned by a cranky old landlord, and it had a reputation of being haunted. Now, that might not mean anything in Shawnee, but it meant something in the 1800s in New Orleans. That's the land of the hoodoo. Marie Laveau lived just a little ways from where Margaret Horry lived. And the reputation that that place had of being haunted was enough to keep that owner from being able to sell it to anybody. But Margaret Horry said, "If we move, the Lord will meet us and bless us." So she took the money that she had and bought the building and started a renovation of it and created an orphanage out of it. Before her life was over, she built 4 orphanages in the city of New Orleans, all starting from iron and clothes back there in the St. Charles Hotel. You see my point about giving? She quit her dairy, and now she's making bread and cakes and crackers and cookies and flour, 800 barrels a day, and macaroni. And Margaret, this lady who could scarcely read or sign her own name, toured the Southland looking for the most modern equipment to put in her plant and developed the first steam-operated bakery south of the Mason-Dixon line. Most modern equipment that there was, and put it in. And in the process, she learned how to sealed packages of her cakes and of her bread and of her cookies, and sold it to sailors. Going on long voyages across the ocean, they needed to have food that could be preserved. And from there, they started shipping it not only from the ports in New Orleans, but all up and down the coast, New York, and on up into Boston and so forth. Her goods went out to the West Coast, and all of them carried the name on it, Margaret's Bakery. So her name became known all across the United States to people who were involved in that kind of thing. Well, there was an interruption in Margaret's work. Our nation fought a great civil war. Now, Margaret was, for her time, she was very unique in this respect. Other people all around her discriminated. Black children weren't given the same chance as white. Jews weren't given the same chance as white. And if they had orphanages at all, if they had any means of caring for their own, they provided it themselves. They didn't have any help from the upper class in society. Margaret said, "A hungry child is a hungry child." It didn't make any difference to her whether it was a black child or a Jewish child or a white child, whether it was a Protestant child or a Catholic child. All she cared about was if it's a hungry child. And if she saw that, she would do what she could to try to reach to that child. Now, I would suppose when I started my little story about Margaret, telling you of the suffering that she had in losing everyone, including especially her own child, and her own experience as an orphan, it made you feel sorry for her. I felt sorry for her when I read the story. However, it took this, perhaps it took this, to give her the heart that she had. And when the Lord allows hardship to come our way, who can say? Who can say what it is that He plans to make of the experiences that we have in life? So the Civil War came, and with it came many a wounded Confederate soldier and many a wounded Yankee soldier. If you went to New Orleans today and visited the section of the city known as Calumet, you would find a cemetery there that's filled up with Civil War soldiers. I visited it one time and I was shocked to find that there are far more Union soldiers buried there than there are Confederate. And I asked the reason why, and I was told that there was a prisoner of war camp there and that many wounded Yankee soldiers who were captured were sent there and died there. Many of them, no doubt their parents, never heard from again or had any idea where they were. Well, New Orleans was one of the first major cities. It was the largest major city captured in the South during the Civil War. And after it was captured, the Union put a general in charge of the city whose name was Ben Butler. And he was called the Beast of New Orleans. Because he was a rude, gruff fellow, he was difficult to deal with. He had the idea that those people need to be subjugated and brought under the iron fist of a heavy-handed rule. Well, he interfered. He set up checkpoints. You could only go out past the checkpoints with special written permission. There was a curfew. No one could be out after certain hours. Margaret's labors, especially caring for the wounded soldiers on both sides, and just like with the Jewish and the black children, she made no distinction. Union or rebel, they were all hungry boys. She carried about all of them. Well, she had her cart loaded with her baked goods, and she came to one of the checkpoints, and the soldiers threatened to shoot her, as you would expect. So she appealed to, by one means and another, she finally came into General Butler's presence. And he told her, in his stern, heartless way, "I've given my orders that anybody that passes these checkpoints without my permission will be shot." And Margaret said, "Does your Union commander believe in starving innocent babies and children?" He said, "You have my permission." So she took her carts and went out into the regions where she needed to go, wherever it was, and all during the Civil War and all the upheaval that went with it. You know, you've seen trouble in your time. Political things go on all around us, and people get so exercised and upset about it and so angry with one another. Maybe there's cause and maybe there's not. But there's always a way that an honest-hearted person can do good, no matter how bad it is. And really, that's the purpose of saints, isn't it? To do good where we have the opportunity to do so. I'll throw in a little aside here. I think of Margaret this way. I read a story once about a little child who went into a chapel building that had stained glass windows and figures of people in the windows. Maybe you've seen those. And the light was shining in through the windows, of course, colored light and so forth. Little girl asked her mother, "Who are those people in the windows?" And she said, "Those are saints. That's why they're put up." "Oh," she said, "Mother, I know. A saint is somebody who lets the light in." Well, Margaret let the light in. I'm not a Catholic. But her theology is probably a lot less important than the spirit that this woman had. It's hard to find fault with somebody who loved her fellow human beings as much as this woman did. So the war ended. And Margaret's factory prospered and became one of the foremost in the South. And along with the four orphanages that she had opened, she built a chapel. And she did what she could to help all the orphans who were coming out of those places as time went by. Built up quite a, well, as you can imagine, by then she was well known throughout the city. Remarkable woman. Because her contact with people had been so gentle and so benign and so wise. Could I say so wise? People valued Margaret's wisdom. In the city of New Orleans, when evening time came, it would still be steaming hot, but Margaret would sit out on the front steps of her bakery, and people would line the streets for 2 blocks to get to come and tell Margaret their troubles, and she gave them a wise answer. And there would be contained in the lines of those who were coming, young people, old people, the drunkard, the beggar, the scoundrel, the person in trouble with the law, and the rich, and the noble, in their chariots, and in their buggies, and with their servants about them, they too. And Margaret met them all the same. And her way of dealing with them was so profound, so great, that all of them came to greatly, heartily respect and appreciate this woman. They called her the Angel of the Delta. They called her the Bread Woman of New Orleans. They called her our Margaret. Well, she lived until late 1800s, and then she died. She was ill for quite a while, and she died. And at Margaret's funeral procession, 2 lieutenant governors were there from the state of Louisiana. The mayor gave a speech on the occasion of her funeral. The whole city sat down for the funeral procession. The Times-Picayune, which is New Orleans still their biggest daily newspaper, blocked the edges of all the pages in black of their paper announcing her funeral. Her funeral obituary was printed on the front page and edged in columns of black like it was a national disaster. Her funeral was attended by thousands. And when the folks who cared for her were preparing her for her burial, went into her room to find a dress to put on her, they found 2. One was a dress that she wore every day, and she washed it every night, and one was her Sunday dress. And that was all she had, along with some $600,000, can you imagine what that would be in today's money, that she contributed upon her death to the various orphanages that were in the city of New Orleans, and once again, she left out none of them. She made no distinction between the Catholic, the Protestant, the Jewish, the black, the white, whatever they were. She gave something to every one of them. Now, when I think of giving, that's the kind of thing that I think of. Now, this scripture that I read to you, I'd like to read it again, says, "The kingdom of heaven is a man traveling into a far country who called his own servants and delivered unto them his goods. And to one he gave 5 talents, and to another 2. Well, of course, talent then meant money. But we read it sometimes and perhaps think today, maybe you have thought this way, I know I have, skills that people have. But that isn't really what it means either. You see, the skills that people have began with Adam. There isn't anything new in that, in Jesus coming here. Adam could think. Adam could prune trees in the garden. Jesus came to bring something that nobody had brought since Adam fell in the garden. He came to bring peace. He came to bring joy. He came to bring satisfaction, happiness, love, long-suffering. He came to bring the fruit of the Spirit. These are the talents, folks. This is what the Lord wants us to use to be a blessing to our fellow humans around us. Everybody's got some skill, but what we have on the inside determines how we use that skill. And that is what we have the most to give to one another. If you can give to somebody joy, you've given them more than money. But more than that, if you have a heart to want to give peace and love and joy to somebody, the money isn't very important. It's easy to give that. And for two reasons. One is because it's not what your heart's most deeply set on. The second is because you can't give it faster than the Lord can put it in your hand. Margaret found that to be true. Although she didn't ever seek it for herself, she had plenty to give to those who were in need, and by means of her gentle, tender spirit, became a blessing to many. And so, the Lord wants us to take advantage of the talents, if I say so, the joy He came to give us, the peace, the hope, the faith. All around us is a world that is thirsty for these things. And I read these things and I think to myself, how shallow my life has been. How much more there could be done. This one woman, without any assistance from anybody else, transformed the lives of so many. And isn't it possible for you and me too, if we put our talent in the Lord's hands, to reach others? Who knows? Who knows where all it may go? I think the Lord wants an army of people who have a heart like Margaret's heart to reach out to opportunity wherever it lies about us. So, when it was all over, the people of New Orleans said she was a mother to the motherless. She was a friend to those who had no friends. She had wisdom greater than schools can teach. We will not let her memory go from us. And so they commissioned a statue of her. It's not a beautiful woman, but it's a woman with little children playing around her feet. And even to this day, the people of the city of New Orleans respect that memory because of what one gentle Christian spirit brought to them. And that's my message this morning. The Lord help us also to have a gentle, giving Christian spirit. You know, true giving, as the Lord would have it to be done, is not about how much money's involved. It's not even really about who gets supported. It's about having a heart to reach everybody as much as we can. And you read the Bible, and there's a lot in it about that kind of thing. Inasmuch as you've done it unto one of the least of these, He said. And the second is like unto it. Love thy neighbor as thyself. And so many places like that. It's easy to read it and conclude that the Lord placed great emphasis on caring for suffering humans around us, wherever they are, whatever the need of their suffering may be. Some in need of physical help, some in need of emotional, some in need of spiritual. I read these things, study this whole story, and it causes me to pray. Lord, help us have people today who, if the people would line up for two blocks and come and ask us for wisdom, we'd have something to say to them. That would be a blessing and a help to them. She didn't have any of the philosopher's knowledge. She wasn't learned in the skilled things of the world, but she had something. No doubt from the Lord. James 1:27 says, pure religion and undefiled before God and the Father is this, to visit the fatherless and the widows in their affliction, and to keep himself unspotted from the world. So, I hope that's an inspiration to you, and you'll take it with you this week and next week and throughout our lives, and do what we can to help a world around about us. Amen.